I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Over the last year, through my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. Over the next few weeks, I'll be talking to people who inspire me and remind us to take better care of ourselves, and people who I believe you, the listener, will benefit greatly by listening to. I'm proud to say today's episode is with thanks to the VHI Women's Mini Marathon, and I'm joined by fellow ambassador and my friend, Aveen Garrahy.
Hi Georgie, I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. Obviously, I wanted you for the first season, but things were crazy for you.
You can only pack so many Garrahys into one season, I think. Are you not sick of us at this stage?
Not at all, not at all. The last year has just been crazy for you. Thank you so much for making the time today, because I know with a baby, it's hectic. You live in Clare. So I really appreciate you making such an effort to be here today.
No, it's a pleasure. And she's a good traveller, so we're good. She's done a lot of mileage over the past few months. I was talking about this recently, and it sounds very exotic and, you know, like rock and roll. It totally isn't. Hanora, in the first, I think, 3 months of her life, was in like 17 hotels. That was only because we were taking Bio on the road and I was working, and, you know, you don't have the luxury of maternity leave. And she was just, she was all over the place. I was like, I don't think I've been that many hotels in my whole adult life.
It's like, know? I would expect Northwest to have been in 17 hotel rooms. That is so impressive. So she's obviously, that helps though, in them becoming kind of sociable, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's harder now because she's getting that little bit older. She was sleeping a lot and it was fine. I'm not dragging her up and down the road as much anymore. It's just probably not fair and also stressful. You know, you can kind of reason with an older child and say, we're nearly there, we'll stop at McDonald's or whatever. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, you dangle the carrot. And when they're younger, they sleep. But she's at that stage now where, you know, she doesn't understand that this is not going to go on forever. And she, it is stressful. It is stressful when you're trying to drive and they're screaming in the back and you're like, oh God, will this journey ever end? But anyway, this morning was fine and we're here and it's all good.
My Pia is the worst in the car, so she still hates it to this day. So from like when she was 2 weeks old, she just screamed the entire way in the car.
It's nothing more stressful.
It is so stressful. Your life has obviously changed so much in the last year. And when you become a mum, it's just such an amazing kind of club to be in, isn't it? You just appreciate life so much.
It's the most amazing thing, and nothing really prepared me for it. You know, I wasn't one of those broody people. My sister Alva is, like, since day one, she was the one with the dolls, and, you know, she would gravitate towards the baby in the room. Whereas I was the Barbie lover, you know, when we were younger in terms of toys. And, you know, as time went on, no, I never felt that real urge to have a baby. But I guess, you know, you meet the love of your life, you get married, and it just, I'm a traditionalist, certainly, and I'm a family person. It just felt like the next step. And yeah, we were ready, and yes, we were trying, and yes, you know, thank God, we were lucky enough to get pregnant. And yeah, I mean, you can read all the books and you can listen to all the podcasts. Nothing really prepares you for it. She has just been the most amazing thing to ever happen to us. In saying that, it's not easy, you know that. And I think, I've learned a lot from mom and listening to her. And, you know, she has been amazing, and my dad as well. And as I said, we are so close. To have that support is half the battle, it really is. And I keep saying it takes a village, and mom gives out to me for saying that. She's like, for God's sake, you're doing it. Like, you know, you're her mother. Stop saying it takes a village. But it does, in the sense that I was, you know, working for myself, and she was too small, obviously, to put into any kind of childcare at that time, you know, because I was back working 2 weeks after having her. I'm an ambassador for Night and Day Jewellery, and we were straight into a shoot. They were running out of time and the season was kicking off, and we hadn't got the shots for that particular collection. It was straight in. Thank God it was a jewellery shoot and not a swimsuit shoot. I was like, right, we can manage neck up, fine, just earrings and you know, chokers, grand. But yeah, so it was straight back into it, and you do rely on family a lot for those favours. And then, yeah, when it comes to advice, just to have my mom, I've heard people talk about not having their mom for those questions, because they don't come with handbook, and you know, if if you don't have someone that you really trust around that you can just ask for real solid advice and honest advice.
And I think the mums, without you having to say it, they sense it off you, don't they? I remember my mum used to just arrive on my doorstep and she always knew what I needed, or she'd make dinner on the day that I was just totally struggling, because I definitely didn't anticipate when I had Pia that 6 weeks afterwards. I thought, like, when the baby went to sleep, you just kind of lounged around the house. But, like, your household chores keep going and the to-do list keeps building up. And I mean, Jamie used to come home from work sometimes, and I know it sounds like such a cliche, but I would still be in the clothes that I was wearing when he left, and I wouldn't have had a shower, and I'd just be like a complete basket case. And then other times he'd come home and I'd be like, we went for two walks today, we popped down to Dundrum, you know. So it really is, every day is so different.
You just take it as it comes. Yeah, totally. And God forbid they'd ask you, what did you do that day? But I think, you know, like I luckily didn't get, I don't think, and I know it can come a lot later postnatal, but I did feel moments of a bit of an identity crisis, you know, where I remember sitting on the bed with Dirren and she said, and it was probably the first time, I mean, you know, people say it kind of a throwaway comment, how are you getting on? But actually she said, even how are you? Because this is mad. Like, Honora is the first in the family, so Alva and Dirren are fascinated by it anyway. But she just said, how are you? And I broke down and I was like, I'm not one to kind of weep or kind of wallow. But I said, I just can't believe that things will never be the same again. That it, you know, and it's totally changed for the better. And God, I count my blessings. I hear so many stories, and you know, we've had speakers at Bio, and you meet people, and you hear the statistics that one in four people, you know, are on a fertility journey, whatever that might be. But just to think that Avian will never be just Avian anymore, that I am now a mom, and that is amazing. But it's also a bit of an identity shift that you have to kind of come to terms with, you know. That was something that, yeah, I suppose on that particular day kind of caught me off guard. And the next day, you know, you're bouncing off the walls again.
And what did Dirren say to you then that day?
She, Dirren's funny, you know, she's the one that will always make you laugh. And, you know, but at that particular moment, she was just the person I needed to kind of share that thought with. And she was like, yeah, I get that, you know. And yeah, to have, you know, her and Alva, and this might come as a strange thing to say, I don't have too many friends. Alva and Dirren are my best friends and always have been. And my mom used to say, you know, friends and boyfriends, they'll come and go, but your sisters, you'll have them for life. And I get emotional even thinking about that, because I'm probably like a low maintenance friend myself.
Yeah.
And I've probably been that way, like, since school days, and a lot of my friends would have struggled with that I would be the one that, you know, might not get back to the text straight away. It might take longer, it might take a week, and you know, some people get annoyed with that, and it would never be intentional. It would never be, you know, that I you know, I don't value that person's friendship, but it would just be something would be going on, or you know, I'd just put it on the long finger, something else would be pressing or whatever. And so for that reason, I've probably fallen out of certain relationships, you know, because I haven't nurtured them in the same way I've nurtured my relationships with the girls. And that has just always been easy. And they're always there. And it's just amazing to have them. I'm so lucky.
I was talking to Dirren on my podcast in season one, and I said that to her because I find that my friends that have sisters, they're often harder to get a hold of, because they just have this support network around them and they almost have everything they need. And no disrespect when I say that, but you have your best friends, you have your family.
Interesting, isn't it? Yeah, and I've never really looked at it that way, but now that you say it, I feel like I have. And it might not always be that way. And look, you and your own family, I've heard you speak about how they have rallied around you and how you appreciate each other so much, because it took something like this to kind of shake the boat a bit and for you to all realise what you have. We will have bumps along the way. We've been so lucky up to now. There will be bumps in the road, and maybe it'll take something like that for us to really, really appreciate it. But thinking about it now, you know, I have John, I have an amazing mom and dad, I have the girls, Honora, what my two amazing dogs, what more do you need in life, you
know? And I think that's why people connect with you guys so much, is because you're very real. And I think you're all very different. So it's not like you're putting on this kind of picture perfect scenario. So like, Darren's the crazy funny one. And, you know, you all have such different personalities. And that's what family's all about. We're all so different. And then I think the fact that you guys do be out together and it's your event, but the whole family is involved. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that at the end of the day, after an event like that, you sit down and you go, whoa, how lucky are we?
Yeah, we do. And that's, I think, probably why we love it so much. It's an opportunity for us to spend time together. We, you know, we're like ships in the night most of the time. And I'm in the West and mom and dad are up and down and they're in Nala, so busy that, to have kind of given ourselves this platform where we can do something we love, but do it together is really special. And we do. But of course, we do the whole post-mortem. How can we improve? We go through the surveys, we analyze them, we scrutinize them. Yeah, I would take what that person said on board, and yeah, we would change that. We would, and it's great to just have that. I guess like the WhatsApp group, we're constantly bouncing ideas off one another, and to have that kind of open line of communication, it was something that mom and dad always probably instilled in us, you know, that a problem shared is a problem halved. And we used to have this forum around the table, and maybe we're missing that now in you know, day-to-day life, family life, where we don't sit down and really kind of just get things off our chest. It always felt like a weight off. And, you know, whether I got in trouble at school or, you know, I was feeling really peer pressured into drinking or, you know, doing drugs or whatever it was we were going through, if we shared it in amongst the family, you know, around the table, it just felt like that instant weight off. And I think if I can bring that into, you know, my own life and family life with Honora and whoever else is coming down the tracks, I think, you know, it's probably the key with now, with all the pressures and all that's going on and this plugged in life that we're living and, you know, with young people and social media and all that they're going through and trying to process, and it's all so public. I think, you know, knowing that you have those supportive ears within your family unit, I think is key, isn't it?
I felt so lucky to be a part of BO. It came into my life at a time when I really needed it. You know, I was going through treatment for breast cancer, and it's lonely. Like, obviously, I had my family there every day, but I missed everyone in work, and I missed having a purpose outside of the home. And I got an email from you, and of course, you were so nice in the email and said, look, think about it, but there's absolutely no pressure. If you'd like to come to BO to tell your story. And I've been doing a few little bits on Instagram, and I chatted with our family, and we said, you know, I felt like it was a very safe environment. So, you know, with you guys and knowing Darren so well. So, and the first one was in Dublin that I did. So yeah. It was only down the road. Yeah. And you gave my mom and her friend tickets so I could see her from the audience. And I think the people that go to BO are so, like, you can hear a pin drop when people are speaking, and that is, you just feel the respect for other people's stories. And that day is a day I'll never forget. So thank you for getting me through a really sad time in my life. And now my memories of my cancer treatment are not all bad.
No, well, we were so honoured and privileged to have you. And I think you were probably the first. We had wellness advocates. And of course, you know, everyone has their own story to tell. And you know, Sheila Shogan and others, you know, have overcome adversity. But I think you were the first person to take to the stage who was in the throes of something that was life altering. And it took such courage and honesty to share your story. And you could hear a pin drop because everyone was just bowled over by your bravery. And you were there to help people. You wanted to let people know that, you know, you were there to share a message. And that is that, you know, it's never too early to check yourself. And that was just like, it was the most amazing thing. And I just couldn't get over how, and you were wearing a wig at the time. And then, of course, like so many people, I was following you every step of the way. And you never cease to amaze with your courage. It was just incredible.
Well, the support definitely helped. Where did yourself and Sharon get the idea for Bio? Because when I was sitting beside, I sat beside Darren in work for up to a year and literally nearly died laughing every single day. I don't know how we got any work done, but we did actually. But I remember she was telling me about these events. So I don't really remember kind of the first one or anything like that. How did they come about?
Yeah, so I trained to be an actor and I acted on stage and on screen for a few years. It never moved as quickly as I wanted it to. And as someone who loves projects and loves being busy and thrives off that, the idea of waiting for the phone to ring used to just stress me. And I used to hate, my number one fear was someone saying, "What are you up to at the moment?" Because, you know, if I wasn't up to something, if I had gone to a few auditions and was waiting for the phone to ring, and, you know, I was waiting for a gig, I felt like, you know, my self-worth and, you know, trying to justify my existence mm-hmm. used to stress me. It just didn't, it never sat well with me because I felt like, oh, you know, I wasn't fulfilling my potential. Mm-hmm. And that was the creative side of me. And that's always been there. But there's another side of the brain that I wasn't using at all. And that was the business side. And, you know, seeing my parents, they were, you know, they've always worked for themselves. And growing up, I used to produce all the time. We used to put on shows at home or like in school, I used to run events for charity. Even in college, we'd put on our own shows. And that I loved that. I got a real kick out of, you know, the organisation aspect of it, the business side of it. How are we going to get bums on seats? But I just never, you know, when you go to school and you go and you see your guidance counsellor, she never tells you you could be a businesswoman. I think, you know, it's never, we're just never told that, you know. It's like, okay, what do you want to do? How are you going to get there? And it usually involves applying for something, but no one ever says, no, go and do it yourself. And so, yeah, I guess it just took me a while to establish that, do you know what? I don't have to just be X. I can be Y too. We put it, and you speak about this as well, that we can put ourselves into these boxes. And I thought, I'm an actor. What would I know about anything other than, you know, acting? But it was helping my dad at a time where he really needed it. It was the middle of the recession and they had closed down their family business. And he had decided that he was going to reinvent himself and set up a new business. And he needed the support at the time. And things weren't happening for me in the acting world, or they just weren't happening quick enough. So I said, well, Dad, I have time. So what, you know, what do you need? And he's like, well, you know, I need a bit of help in terms of marketing it. And you've built up a few contacts from being in Fair City. And, you know, you've been dealing with a few PR companies. We need to get a few, you know, we need to get the word out there, but we've no budget, you know. So it was all this kind of trying to make something out of very little, you know, mm-hmm. and trying to kind of put a new business, a startup on the map. And so I learned really quickly. I went to a lot of Fall to Ireland, you know, meetings and learned how to use apps that would, you know, design graphics for a new business, all that kind of stuff. And you'd learn little skills along the way. But at the same time, I was, you know, in a relationship with a man in the West that felt like career suicide, you know, and also the feminist in me was like, what am I doing? I'm going to the West for love. And I was in denial probably for a long time that it was making me happier every time I got on that Naas road and headed for the, you know, the country. And as a Dublin person, now my family are from Clare, but, you know, we only used to go there on our holidays or weekends, long weekends. It certainly wasn't where I was going to end up in my mind. I was going to end up, you know, in Broadway, but that didn't work out. So I guess, yeah, that jarred for a long time, I thought, but actually I just felt a sense of calm every time, you know, I went to Clare. And when I decided to finally be honest with myself, that's when I decided to move. And and I guess when I came to terms with that and was really honest, that's when, you know, I started to be happiest. And I started then to get resourceful down there. And because that producer in me was like, right, OK, what are we going to do? We're going to put on show. John wanted to get, you know, people into the hotel and he wanted to showcase the hotel. And I was like, right, OK. So we had different events, you know, fashion events, charity events. And it was only being there and surrounding myself with the you know, the beautiful scenery and the, you know, the I really developed a love for the outdoors with John. You know, it was something he was into. I was lonely at times because I'd left my support network. And, you know, John was married to the business and is, and you know, that's always been the way. And it's the hotel business, so it's antisocial. And he used to spend, you know, long hours at work, and I would have left my family and friends, and I would have felt quite lonely at times. And then we got our dogs and they changed everything. I never felt alone anymore. And they were my saviours, really. Like, they got me out. Those four eyes looking up at me, you know, are you going to sit there and wallow in your, you know, your own self-pity? Or are you going to get us up and out? So we used to, yeah, we used to get out and about, and I just loved it. Like, the sea was therapy for me, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was where, I guess, that the beginning of putting myself first and being honest and saying, right, you know, looking after myself, looking after my mind is so important. And yeah, and then, you know, that mixed with that desire to kind of do something and do something worthwhile. Dublin feels spoilt for all this stuff. But actually, you know, I saw women who, like you say, were putting themselves way, way down their list of priorities and, you know, really draining the cup. And I said, right, we need to do something. We need to get people here and share their knowledge. And so, sorry, this is a really long way of explaining
I am enjoying this.
How BO came to be. So it was the first one was in the Armada. It was a safe place and it was, you know, it was John's place and I knew it. And yeah, we asked Erin to come on board and she said, OK. And then we started to kind of build up the lineup. And it was the feedback just after, you know, the very first one that gave me more joy than any theatre review or any credit on any show that I've ever done in my 10 years acting. It was just that, you know, you hear from women saying this came at a time in my life when I needed it the most. Mm-hmm. Or I was so... I am scared to get out of that relationship until I went to BO, or I needed the boot up the arse to go for that job that I kept putting off, or whatever, you know. And to get that kind of, it was just amazing. I was like, actually, this may make a difference, you know. And so I got a kind of, I got addicted to that then. And so we've kept going. And we've now welcomed over 10,000 women across Ireland. And we had our first in the north. So that was cool as well. So yeah, it's kind of going from strength to strength, thank God.
It's so incredible. And Sheila Shoga is a massive part of it. And I was actually on my way down and I was getting word on Twitter that Sheila sang.
Yeah.
And I got down and my friend Audrey Hamilton, who's an artist, sells her prints at your event. And she was like, oh my God, Georgie, Sheila just sang. I said, I saw it on Twitter. So tell us about that moment. That must be one of the standout moments in BO for you.
Yeah, every event is different. Like, the lineup isn't necessarily different every time. But like, you've witnessed it, that there's something about the atmosphere in the room that is, I think, unique. I think it's special. And when you see hands go up and women sharing really intimate details, but they feel safe enough to do that, like, if you could bottle that, and I've you know, I want to develop it online, but I just, and we will, you know, we'll have articles and we'll have, you know, videos and whatever. But I think, you know, there's nothing like being there in the room for that live experience. And, you know, you sharing your story or Sheila singing, someone, I think it was Sheila was telling a story about her nana. And I think it was that she felt so blessed to be sharing another birthday with her nana. I think maybe she was up in the 90s or 100. And she said, and then her nana sang. And someone in the audience just put up her hand and said, what did she sing? And will you share it with us? And she did. And oh my God, like, we didn't, like, we know Sheila has the most amazing voice. Mm-hmm. And everyone says at every event, please put that voice on air again, or do a podcast or do a meditation tape or whatever. But when we heard her sing, we were like, oh my God, it's like the voice of an angel. So it was amazing. Yeah, it was amazing. But there's been so many amazing moments. And that's what makes it really special.
And do you hear then from many people once the day is over and you go home, is that when the messages start coming in?
Yeah. And after it, and, you know, or I've got like pictures of girls at a new desk and they're like, thank you, Bio. Or like, Barbara Nestor told me that her sister is now running for council because, you know, Bio inspired her to just go for it. And she was, you know, again, she was putting herself into this box and why would I be qualified to go for it? It's the voice, it's the inner voice that can cripple us, can't it? And she does serve a place, you know, she's the one saying, you know, don't lose the run of yourself. And that's no harm either. I think it's a really Irish thing, but it's no harm that we don't lose the run of ourselves. But at the same time, she can really cripple us to kind of really fulfill our potential. Elizabeth Costigan has given her a name. She calls her Elizabeth, and I mm-hmm. think that's amazing, you know. And she says, you know, get back. Yes, you serve a place, you, just not in the front of the car, you know, get back into the boot or whatever on this journey through life. And I think there's something really, you know, really interesting in that. We're the only nation in the world that uses "she loves herself" as a put down. You know, your one loves herself. What's wrong with loving yourself? I think it's probably the most vital thing we can and should do.
And I think through Bio and through podcasting and through all these conversations that women are having now, I think people are really taking notice of their feelings and saying, no, you know what, I'm just going to pass on that because I would rather stay at home with a book, and I'd rather yeah. stay in because I just need a bit of R&R.
Yeah, we're learning to say no, which is no harm.
I want to talk about John and Everest because I want to know what the night was like before he went. Obviously, it was a dream of his, and you obviously supported him through that, but he must have been a nervous wreck.
Well, it was 10 years in the making. Like, John was one of these people who was not sporty, and he let himself get probably quite heavy and unhealthy. He's, you know, he's a workaholic for sure, like loves what he does. But the comforts of a hotel, the food, you know, the warmth and being surrounded by people all the time, it doesn't lend itself to a healthy lifestyle.
I'm so surprised by that. I would have just, by looking at him now, just presumed that he was always really sporty.
No, he grew up in rural Ireland. And if you're not good at GAA, and especially at that time, if you weren't good at you know, at football or hurling, there wasn't much else. And, you know, he'll openly say, you know, that wasn't for me. So I think he read an article about maybe Pat Falvey. It was something, maybe Pat wrote it, or it was about Pat Falvey, who's one of Ireland's mm-hmm. greatest mountaineers. And it was about him climbing Everest. And John said, you know, I'm going to do that one day. And he decided there and then. Now, it was a long, long journey to get there. And when he went down to Carn Tuil for the first time, he didn't make it to the top. He's since climbed it about 250 times, but the very first time he didn't. And I think he was quizzing the guide who he booked to bring him up about Everest. And he had still made this decision in his mind that eventually he would get there. It might take 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, but he would get there. And yeah, when I met him, a first date was put off for, you know, an expedition to Mont Blanc. And I was going, like, mountain climbing, what the hell? It's so weird. Like, didn't get it. And, you know, it took me a long time to get it. We went on trips. Now, I really enjoyed the days out in the hills with them, and now I enjoy them even more. But I was young, like, we met, I was in my really early 20s, and all my friends were in Dublin, nights out, social scene, you know, and I was, you know, trying to carve out a career in acting, and I should have been, you know, hanging around Temple Bar, the Project Arts Centre, being a coolio, like, you know, yeah. I should have been doing that. And instead, this man in the West was bringing me up mountains, and then, you know, brought me to the Himalayas for the first time to base camp. And it, like, that is such a culture shock, you know. It's miserable. Like, the food is crap, the accommodation is crap, you're cold, I hate the cold, and I got really, really bad altitude sickness. And I thought, you know, if this doesn't break us, like, we're destined to be together. And look at, it was a struggle, the whole trip was a struggle, but we still talk about it and still say that it was probably one of the most amazing experiences ever. And I've since gone back, and I didn't get altitude sickness. So I went back then when he was eventually going to climb Everest. That came at a really strange time in my life, just as I finished Dancing with the Stars. So it was like chalk and cheese, yeah. You know, to go from the glitz and the glamour of Dancing with the Stars and the mad carnival that it is. And a week later, we were heading for Everest. And like, John's, my Dancing with the Stars journey was only 5 months, and it was mental. This has been coming for John for 10 years. So Dancing with the Stars was a real inconvenience for him, actually, because he was preparing for this amazing trip and trip of a lifetime. And actually, like, you know, it could have gone one way or another. And you're dealing with all of that. And yeah, and I was kind of
Yeah,
training kind of for 6 days a week.
Well, with Dancing with Stars, yeah, and it was up in Dublin, and yeah, it was full on. Well, it was for 5 months, like 10 hours a day, and it was incredible and amazing. But yeah, to go from that then to heading out to John, we can go to back to Dancing with Stars in a second. But by the time we'd actually got there, and we trekked in, and there was a trekking group with us, and we were part of the expedition team. At that stage, after all that time, I had really bought into the idea that, you know, I was really invested in it. I felt part of it. You know, we had set up Elevate, which was the youth mm-hmm. wellness charity, and John was going to be doing the climb for that. And, you know, I had gone on other trips with him in the lead up, and I had seen, we had met the Sherpas who he was going to be climbing with. They came and visited us the Christmas before that. And I think John brought them over, and he didn't really bring them over, especially they were coming over to kind of do a tour of Ireland and talk about Everest. But they stayed with us for a couple of nights over Christmas. And I think John, he really calculated that well, because they convinced me that he was able for, not able for it. No one can really tell if you're able for it or not. But they said, you know, he has done the work. He's put in the hours. He's built up the altitude. We've seen him in action. You know, he's got the mindset for
okay.
it. So when I heard it from them, mm-hmm. from the horse's mouth, really, mm-hmm. you know, these guys who see it all the time and they're there every year and, you know, live in the mountains. I think that was the turning point. That's where I was like, okay, it's not just a crazy pipe dream. You know, this could be something.
Did you
tangible.
Ever try to talk him out of it?
So many times. And I shot it down so many times, which probably wasn't fair, because for him, you know, it was his time. It was his headspace. You know, he was surrounded by people all the time in the hotel. And for him, like, his self-care was to get out in the mountains and have the rain pelting against his face, have a soggy mm-hmm. sandwich and a cup of tea. And he just loved that, because it was just so different to what his everyday was, you know, and the pressures that come with work and to be able to just put the phone away and just get out and get away from it all. And then when the time was right, who was I to say, don't do this, you know?
Because I was looking at clips actually of him coming home the other day, and while doing research for this interview, I wasn't just randomly Googling him, but you could see in his face like how much it meant to him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll never forget that. That was our Kennedy moment.
Yes. Oh my God. It was perfect. It was perfect.
Well, you see, he was the first Clare man. It was completely mad. Shannon Airport was like, no one in Clare has ever climbed to the top of the world. So, you know, we want to do something. And the Shannon Airport is great because it's, you know, it's a lot smaller than other airports. And so, yeah, they could do that. They could put on the show. And oh my God, people came out in their droves to kind of welcome him back. He was kind of the Cú Chulainn for a day.
It was amazing to see, though, because you could see it in his face just how much it meant to him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but I'll never forget saying goodbye, because I trekked into base camp with him, and that, you know, we were trying to stay positive because I knew what was up ahead for him. But in the back of my mind, I was like, you know, of course you think I mm-hmm. may never see you again. And that night, when I knew that we were saying goodbye the next morning, neither of us slept a wink. And we just cried, both of us. It was mad. We just cried and cried and just like hooked it out the entire night long. And then, yeah, I'll never forget just turning around and walking back down. And I had like a week trek back to Kathmandu to Lukla. And then we would get the flight to Kathmandu. And yeah, it was just, that was hard. I had John's nephew, who was only 13 as well at the time. He came with us, and the two of us, we kind of took comfort in each other, because we were both really, really sad to say goodbye to him there, you know.
And were you able to track him, or?
It's very little communication.
Okay.
So when they do start to move up the mountain, he would get a message to me to say, I won't be able to contact you for 7 days now. And then when they go for the summit push, he couldn't contact me for the week, and the news came through that Uli Steck, who's like a mountaineering god, we met him on the way up and John was like starstruck. He's like the Nadal of the mountains. Like, he's this Swiss machine, they call him.
Okay.
Because he's just like, they thought he was invincible. And the news came through that, so we met him, got photos, and you know, we'll always have those photos. And Yeah, I was at home and hadn't heard from John, but you're following like this sat-nav thingy where you can track their coordinates as they move up the mountain. They keep that on their person and you can kind of click into it and you refresh it every few minutes to see that they are making progress. But while I was doing all this, a BBC headline came up on my phone to say that Ulrich Stegge died on the mountain. And I just, that was probably the lowest point where I just went into orbit. I was like, he's the one that John like idolized. It's like who they all, the whole expedition team were like, there's Ulrich Stegge. He was going to do some crazy route and without ropes. And he actually went up without his Sherpa and without oxygen. And like, I remember not knowing what to do because I couldn't talk to John or whatever. So I went to the Poor Clares. It's a convent in Ennis. And I went in to meet Sister Bernadine, who is a nun in there. You just turn to your religion. It's strange. Mm. And I'm spiritual. I am religious, but I don't go to mass. Like, and, you know, and a visit to a convent seems like a really strange thing to do, but I just actually didn't know what else to do. But I knew this nun in there, her nephew had climbed Everest. So I was like, could I speak to Sister Bernadine? And she came out and I said, I just want to talk to you for a minute. And she was amazing. And she, like, they have all the mod guides. She printed off the full article. And she's like, oh, he was foolhardy, she said. And she was trying to make me feel better. John wouldn't do that. He has ropes and he has oxygen. He's got his Sherpas and blah, blah, blah. So she made me feel better. And of course we prayed. But yeah, it's mad. In those times of crisis, you just don't really know where to put yourself, you know.
He's incredible. And I was, when he won Clare Person of the Year, I read an article about it and said, when he was up there, basically what he did was just put one foot in front of the other and he didn't think about 5 minutes or, you know, it was just in the moment, just keep walking. And that was around the time when I started to get better and I had joined a gym and I'd got onto the treadmill for the first time. And I always remember that he said that. So when I get on the treadmill, I'd be like, just keep going, just one foot. Don't think about I've been doing this for 10 minutes and now I'm really tired or, you know, what's the next 5 minutes going to bring? I just used to just try to stay in the moment as much as I could because I always remembered what he said.
Amazing.
Going on now, I suppose, to the VHI Women's Mini Marathon. Mm-hmm. That's my Everest, I suppose, this summer because I've walked it before. I walked it with my friend and I went home that night and I was really tired and I went straight to bed, which was really unlike me. Yeah. And the following week I found out I was pregnant. So myself and Pia have I feel like we've done it together.
Yeah, amazing.
It's going to be an amazing day, June 2nd. I feel blessed to be an ambassador because I suppose I like to work with things I believe in. And I know that you guys are really like that as well, that you don't just kind of sign up to anything. You work on things that you believe in.
Yeah.
So are you excited? Because you couldn't do it last year.
Yeah, I couldn't. I was ready to pop and I'll never forget it. I was actually raging. I couldn't do it, but we had to be responsible and all the rest. And it was really close to my due date. So I stayed on the side. I was there on the day and I stayed on the sideline and cheered on the girls. And then I just watched the sea of women and it was like, what, 30,000 more women, all in different colours. It's this sea of colour. And you know everyone's there for a reason, whatever that is. You know, everyone's coming with a story, someone that they're doing it for, someone they're doing it with. We met a woman before it all kicked off, 93. And she was the eldest on the day. I was like, if I could be here at 93 now, I'd be doing well. But it's just, it's the most amazing day. It's the only one of its kind, you know, in the world, all female event. I think they've raised over 200 million for charity since it started. And yeah, it's just, it's the atmosphere and, you know, people doing it for something really, really close to their heart, whatever that name or colour is on your t-shirt. That's why it's such a special day.
I think I'm going to be really emotional this year. So I basically want to try and run it or jog it. So I might kind of go off on my own, like my mum's going to walk it. So I might just kind of run on or something and just see how I get on and put a podcast in or put some music and just go for it. But I kind of can't imagine finishing it because it's just, it's so huge for me to have gone from chemotherapy to something like this. But I couldn't think of nicer people to do it with. Like, there's a really nice squad this year, isn't there?
Gorgeous bunch. Like, it felt like a reunion, you know, as well. It was gorgeous. And all, you know, everyone's so different, which is lovely. And that's the brilliant thing about it, that, you know, I think there were hundreds of women over the age of 70 there. And then you had, you know, young girls and... yeah, and it's all ages, and everyone coming with their own story. It's just it's an amazing day. I'm so looking forward to it. I've been able to do it this year.
I'm training by doing the park runs on Saturday mornings. So I go down to my local park in Cabinteely, and I was really kind of nervous the first time I went because I've never really run before, and I didn't know, you know, would I be able to keep up? But when I went down, there's about 200 or 300 people that do it every Saturday morning, and everyone kind of brings each other along and encourages each other. And that is just so important, isn't it?
Yeah, it's empowering, really, isn't it? And yeah, I did a lot of the training last year, and hearing and sharing that as well on Instagram, and hearing people's progress. So, like, I would encourage people to share how they're getting on with us, with the ambassadors, and because we'll all egg each other on, and we'll all kind of encourage one another. That's what's great about it.
Yeah, I'm really excited for the actual morning of it and getting down there. Could you please share with me your healthy habits, because you look amazing. I think you absolutely glow from the inside out, and I need to know what you do every day.
Oh, like, I mean, I'm not a gym bunny. Mm-hmm. I never was. And yeah, it took me a while to kind of come to terms with that, because you try and fight it. You think, well, this was what I should be doing. But I think, you know, the best form of fitness is the one you enjoy. And, you know, I think if you're really, really struggling with something, just move on to another option, you know. And for me, yeah, the gym was hell. And so I've parked it. I don't know if I'll ever rejoin a gym, but I love the outdoors. I love swimming. I love trekking. I love kayaking. I love I guess I find real therapy in nature. And that's not something that you need to be in the countryside to do. Like, we are an island, and, you know, no one's too far from beautiful scenery in Ireland. It's here on our doorstep in Dublin as well. We just need to kind of go and explore it a bit more. We take these things for granted. And I think, yeah, for me, it's that. But everyone's different. In terms of, God, the healthy eating thing I struggle with. I'm not a good cook. It's so funny. I'm a really, really bad cook. Like, some people... you know, they find it really relaxing. I just don't. It's the complete opposite for me. And there's usually a casualty. And at the moment, you know, I spoke there a few minutes ago about that time around the dinner table. It's not happening in our house at the moment because I don't cook. I'm trying to keep Panora alive. And John is really busy with work. So we have opted for clean cut meals, which is like, it's a really short term solution to a long term problem. I will eventually need to kind of pull up my socks and just get a few recipes, you know, in the bag and just roll them out for now, because, you know, my sanity is more important and there's a lot going on. And, you know, when you have a new baby, you're just trying to juggle it all. Cooking is just one thing I just can't juggle right now. So we have these clean cut meals, and they're really healthy and they're great. They go into the fridge. But the worst thing is that I take one out and I heat it up and I eat it when I'm hungry, and John does the same. And we don't have that family time of, you know, preparing the meal together or sitting down together and enjoying it together while it's hot or whatever. So that's not good. I would not encourage that. But I, for now, it's fine.
But that's what I love about you, Eivin, because, you know, I think lots of people are like, oh, Eivin Gary, she's so perfect. And here you are saying, no, well, actually, I don't cook, and we get our meals delivered and I stick it in the microwave. And I think that's what people need to hear, is that you're not making pasta sauce from scratch every day.
I wish. I'll get there. I hope I'll get there eventually. But no, for now, it's just not a runner. But yeah, I'm very shy. Like, and even here, this is totally nerve wracking for me. It's mad. For someone who, you know, maybe I put a lot of stuff out there on social media, or someone who, maybe for the last 10 years, I've been kind of in the public, you know, there's no such thing as celebrity in Ireland. And, you know, lots of people won't have, they'll be tuning into this, they won't have a clue who I am. But I think, you know, for someone who's maybe been in an entertainment industry for a while, I'm really shy. And yeah, I think that's what I loved about acting, is that I could put on that mask and, you know, you can be whoever you want. But the interview stuff is something that they don't talk to you about in college. Mm. You know, you're either good at it or you're not. And I don't particularly think I am. And, you know, it's not a module. It's funny. You know, you decide to do a certain career in college, and the fundamental things like your tax, you know, you are the business. So setting up your own business, and the interviews and the media skills, none of that was touched on when I was in college. Maybe they've changed it now, but it certainly wasn't a module that I, or maybe it was and I just missed it. But anyway, so all this stuff doesn't come naturally to me. And that was the same with Dancing with the Stars. I am competitive, but I'm probably reserved, you know. So, yeah, that element of, you know, doing the interviews and exposing myself, the VT footage, that used to keep me up at night. People said, geez, well, you know, did you find the dancing very hard? No, I loved the dancing. You know, you've been doing a little bit of it with the Battle of the Stars. And it's amazing what it does, the happy endorphins that it releases, moving your body. And I would love a challenge. You know, I'd love the challenge of learning the steps and trying to master them and watching, you know, the moves and forming the pictures and telling the story and getting into the role and the character. It's, you know, that's what I love. But the whole other side of it and the interview side of it, that was what was difficult, I found. And while I was competitive, I was reserved. So the pushing myself to kind of compete was yeah, it was probably a little bit more difficult. And it's funny, with women as well, you know, if you're competitive, grand. But if you're forceful with that competitiveness, it seemed to be a bad thing. And people hate it. Mm-hmm. Think she's aggressive. Whereas with men, if they're competitive and, you know, they push themselves, it's like, he's a legend. He's, you know, he's ambitious. He's a high achiever. It's funny, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's going back to what you said about she loves herself,
yeah,
doesn't she?
Yeah.
But I think with you guys, people connect with you. I think, you know, people can see through things. And I think everyone knows that the Garrahys are lovely people. And I love you guys. And you've supported me so much. And thank you so much. I have one more question for you. What is your hope for yourself going forward?
My hope for myself is that I continue to have a glass half full approach to life, that, you know, as I said, there will be bumps and, you know, I'm very aware of how lucky I am. I try to practice gratitude on a daily basis and see the bigger picture, not sweat the small stuff. So I hope I can kind of maintain that positivity. But actually, as you become a mom, stuff starts to creep in. I was very like my dad for years and years and years, really easy going. And now I'm starting to see more of my mom in me. I guess that's the whole thing with becoming a mother. You start to worry or stress about, you know, certain things. And you feel all of a sudden this responsibility on you. And so, yeah, maybe my personality has shifted slightly. But I hope I can try and stay positive and create, you know, that nurturing family unit that, you know, that I've been blessed with. I know you have, because I think that's what life's about, isn't it?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me, Georgie. It's a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Good Glow podcast, brought with thanks to the BHI Women's Mini Marathon. Please subscribe so you can be the first to hear about new podcasts. And if you enjoyed this one, please leave a review. You can check out thegoodglow.ie for more of my story and follow me on Instagram at Georgie J. Crawford.